Welcome back to the Hemingway List, the podcast where we do things the Hemingway. Today we are talking about Book 11, Chapter 2. I think. Yeah, is that right? Yeah, it is. Look, these last couple of chapters, Chapter 1, 2, and 3. Wait, what one did we read? I thought we already read Chapter 2. These last two chapters then. I thought it was the last three. Why did I think that? The last few chapters, let's just say that, have not meant much to me. He's gone right back to his style of just baffling. I'm sure whatever's going on isn't that complex, isn't that convoluted. But I'll be damned if I can follow what Dosto's trying to say. He just seems to take the most simple bit of plot development and embed it into these impossibly boring rants that just go for two pages, two straight big pages of small text. And it's just a character just apparently having a conversation, but they'll just talk for 6 minutes without the other person having a chance to talk. It's so weird. And then the narration is just like jumps, and it's all these non sequiturs, and just like there's every three or four sentences, there's literally just a sentence where I don't know why that's there. Like there's sentences that just seems I've copied and pasted a random sentence from a random page of a different book and just slapped it in there, and I'm like, I don't know why that sentence is there. I don't know what it means. It just seems completely out of place. There's no context to it. Or if there is, it's like a puzzle you've got to solve. Like, oh, why did they just say that there in that random place? I can't follow it. I don't know what it is. I don't know what it is about this book. I'm too dumb for this book. That must be it. But the weird thing is I've read other Dostoevsky, and it's fine. So I don't know. It must be the translator. That's all I can think. But it just doesn't sink in. I'm really struggling. I couldn't tell you a single thing that's happened in the last couple of chapters. If it wasn't for the daily discussions kind of like ironing it out, you know, laying it out straight so I could know a little bit what's going on. If it wasn't for that, I would be completely in the dark. Like, if I read this book by myself and got to the end of it, I would not be able to say I've read The Brothers Karamazov, because I would have absorbed so little of it that I just was, none of it meant anything. I might as well have like listened to an audiobook of it in a different language that I don't speak for how much of it actually makes sense to me. Anyway, the questions that I asked you guys were this. Now, Madame Holokov is having manic episodes. What's wrong with these people? Are they all crack fiends? So she's talking in a way that all of the characters seem to do this, where they just go on these rants where it's 5 or 6 or more minutes of straight talking, where they just jump from here to there, and they're actually talking to another person, but that other person, I can't picture in my head what the narrative is. Like, what's this other person doing? Like, imagine saying, hi, how's your day? Oh, yeah, I'm good, thanks. What's happening? Yeah, this, that. Like, you're talking back and forth, and then the other person just talks for 10 minutes. And you just, what do? Just stand there for 10 minutes? Are they sitting? Or are they, like, walking? They could have walked down the street and gone to a shop and walked back to the house in the amount of time it would have taken them to say this rant. And then the rants are impossibly long that, like, no one could respond to a rant like that, because it's too much information. It's like this overflow of information. So I don't get it. And then all of the characters talk in the exact same voice. Like, none of them have a unique voice. It's all just the same person talking through different mouths. So I don't really see how there's different characters in this book. It's just like there's these token sort of 2D things that we're meant to call characters, and it's like, oh, this one, and they've got all these really, really in-depth like personality traits. It's like you'd need Jung or freaking like you know, some psychoanalyst to like tell you the in-depth, oh, this is a very realistic representation of this personality type or this mental disorder and that. But it's just like a, it's like a, they're like an avatar of that disorder or that personality type. They're not authentic at all. It's just like a two-dimensional cutout cardboard that says nihilistic person, or you know, but then they don't really act out those things at all. It's just, other than the things that they do and say, but their personalities aren't that, if that makes sense. It's like going, oh, I'm killing someone relentlessly. Anyway, what was I saying? Oh, by the way, I'm a psychopath. And it's like, what are you though? Because you you don't seem like it's. Oh, I'm a vicious killer. Yeah, I just had a vicious, very angry outburst, and I killed someone just then as I was talking, actually. So, and it's like, yeah, okay, you can say that and have done it, but like, that's not like, oh, vicious. Yeah, it's like there's no personality in it. There's no anything. It's just blank. It's the blankest, worst representation of characters I have ever seen in a book. Ever. It's quite remarkable. And I don't understand how it's a good book. I don't understand how it's so highly praised. I feel like I'm going crazy reading this book because I just don't. It's not even like, oh, it's not my taste. You know, I can see why other people might like it or that kind of thing. I can see no redeeming qualities for this book. Anyway, enough of me bitching and moaning. The other question I asked was not really a question, it was a sentence. It said, literally, zero bits of this chapter meant anything to me. Uncle Drosselmeyer had a go at responding to my bitchiness. Uncle Drosselmeyer said, I think it's the first time we hear the name of the town where all the action happens. The town's name is Skoto-Prigonyevsk, but it is a fictional place created by Dosto, perhaps derived from the word Skoto, blah, 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 translated to English to stockyard. Yeah, he said it's the first time he's mentioned it. And I had the very distinct feeling that the author wanted us to sort of take note of that and read into what the name means. And it was very ham-fisted. It was very on the nose to be like, oh, by the way, this is the first time I've mentioned it, and like point that out. I don't care. You know, if the author's got to like spoon feed you something like that, like, ooh, the name of this town has, you can read into it or something like that, then yeah, I don't know. Okay, like I'll bite. What do you got? What's the symbolism? Okay, very clever. Well done. I don't know. I don't care. It's crap. It's crap writing. I found this chapter hilarious, said Uncle Drosselmeyer. Although Madame Holokov is always a test of patience, she wasn't aware of Rakitin's feelings for her. His unrequited love sent him from the friend zone to the total enemy zone, and now, out of spite, he is spreading fake news about Madame Holokov. I'm intrigued by Ivan. What lies behind his actions? Have a great week. Thank you very much. I will have a great week. Okay. Laura Y. Stitch said, Madame Holokov is always a test of patience. She really is. Alyosha is about to leave, and only then does she share the information that actually matters to him. I do enjoy her character. Uncle Drosselmeyer says, me too. I find her amusing and scatterbrained every time. Tekrific said, it's hard to try and retain in my memory the salient points for Madame Holokov's whimsical thought meanderings. She's upset because Rakitin's been spilling the beans to some gossip rag. She's painted as some lovesick and desperate aging widow. She's 40, times have changed, haven't they? And her involvement with Mitya is making her out as an accomplice to his intended escape. She's been paying more attention to her appearance, and two suitors, Rakitin and Perkhotin, have been paying attention to her, especially Rakitin, the little rat, but now they've fallen out. The list of Kohoklov worries are compounding. She is to be a witness in the upcoming trial, so she's worrying about that. But the main issue seems to be Lisa, usually the epicenter of her troubles and worries, and Lisa has demanded that Ivan be banned from the house. Also, Lisa struck a servant girl and having her usual temper tantrums. Apparently the musker quack paid a visit to the household and now Lisa is walking. Are you with me so far? Okay, Kolokov wants Alyosha to suss out what lies behind Lisa's current state of mind. I think that's what happened in this chapter. Berhoten, isn't that the guy from the pawn shop that bought the guns, right? Says I am Norwegian. I didn't recognize that name at all when I read the chapter. Yes, that's him, says Tekrific. He washed the blood off Mitch's hand. He's also the fellow that Kolokov sent a note to confirming that she didn't lend him any money. Ah, oh, he's the murderer. I think I just figured it out. I think he's the murderer. I am Norwegian said, oh, Lisa withdrew her promise. I was wondering how they were doing after the time skip, but it seems like it just fizzled out. At least she's walking again. Question one, Kolokov is frantic after having read about herself in the newspaper, especially with the story calling her bored and lonely, frustrated widow, still not reconciled with her lost youth, and insinuating that her and Dmitri were an item. Plus she's a bored widow who loves gossip. If there's anybody in real life that talks like Dostoy's character, it's bored housewives that love gossip. One of the previous times we saw Kolokov, she was raving about feminism. Now she's everything in the light of diminishing responsibility. The footnotes mention that while Dostoy saw that defense in a dim light, he did argue it successfully when defending a woman in court. Either way, I think Kolokov is a bit of a vehicle for Dostoy to criticize the people who attach themselves to whatever new, fashionable, and progressive thought is sweeping the country. What did Rakitin do to Kolokov? Good question. And hey, thank you, I am Norwegian, for attempting to answer in earnest my very spiteful and bitchy questions. Because I actually do appreciate the effort that you've put in there to explain to me what's happening. Thank you. I do actually thank you. I find it so weird that why would a newspaper publish an article about, you know, housewife gets old and lonely, or widow is frustrated at her lost youth. What kind of newspaper? And why is she like important or something? They're just kind of normal people. I don't understand that in a way. Why the heck is there newspaper articles about these people? I mean, I suppose there's the murder could be covered in the newspapers. But is she really involved in that? Is that got anything to do with her? I don't know. Tekrific said, what did Rakitin do to Kolokov? He spoke to the gossip press that printed a story about the investigation of Mitchell and it mentioned Kolokov in a bad light. She feels he's tarnished her reputation. Okay, so she was mentioned in an article about Mitcha. I have no idea why she would be. What is her involvement with Mitcha? Does she know Mitcha? Has there been any interaction between those two characters? Cannot remember. I don't actually know who Madame Kolokov is. Other than a character in this book, I can't remember her relationship to any of the other characters. And I'll tell you something. You can probably guess. I don't care. I don't give a shit. She has zero personality. None of them are people. They're just annoying names in an annoying book. I've never felt less for a bunch of characters than I do in this book. It's quite remarkable. It's rather bad, I would say. Let's read the next chapter. And how long is it? Oh, it's not too long. It's, what's that, 5 and a bit pages, 5.5. And there's a lot of dialogue, back and forth dialogue, which actually makes the chapter slip along a little quicker as well. So, that's good, because it's 2 in the morning here, as you can probably tell by how grumpy I am. the quality of the episodes, it does tend to actually change depending on how late I do them. Maybe I should try to get into the habit of doing these a little bit earlier, so I'm not pissy. That would probably be good. Last night's was a late one as well, in case you couldn't tell. Alright, chapter 3 is called A Little Demon. Excuse the yawn. Going into Lisa, he found her. Who did? Alyosha. Going into Lisa, he found her half reclining in the invalid chair, in which she had been wheeled when she was unable to walk. By the way, you have to He does this at the start of nearly every chapter. He will just say he. Like, going into Lisa, he found her half reclining. He actually did it at the start of the previous chapter as well. The first of these things was at the house of Madame Holokov, and he hurried there to get it over as quickly as possible. So, it does it twice in that one, actually, because it says the first of these things, what things? And then it says blah, 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 he hurried there. Who again? Who are we talking about? And he makes it so you have to then refer back to the previous chapter to figure out what he's referring to. That's just textbook bad writing. Like, you know, when you change to a new scene or something, you need to let the reader know who you're talking about, so you use their name. So it should say, like, going into Lisa, Alyosha found her half reclining, because it's a new chapter, and you assume, if you have any kindness for your reader, and Dostoevsky has intentionally removed his consideration of the reader in this book, he's actually been as inconsiderate as possible to the reader. He's removed all that. But if you are considerate to your reader, you think, oh, well, there's a good chance that they put the book down at the end of the previous chapter. That's a pretty natural place where people stop reading. They read to the end of the chapter and take a break. So maybe at the start of a new chapter, I'll mention who the character is again, just so they remember what we're referring to. That's what 99.9999% of writers would do, because they're not shitty writers. But if you're a shitty writer, you can just make your reader have to go back and figure out what you're talking about, because for no reason. Anyway, the chapter starts like this. Going into Lisa, he found her half reclining in the invalid chair in which she had been wheeled when she was unable to walk. Oh, actually, there is a reason. He was trying intentionally, I just remembered, to make the writing bad in this book, to do an impression of a provincial writer, and that's why he's made these bad choices and intentionally made this a bad reading experience for you. I don't know how anyone can claim to enjoy this book when the author themselves didn't want you to enjoy it. It boggles my mind. I don't understand. Okay, I'm sorry. It's 2 a.m. I'm clearly pissed off. By the way, I think I'm getting the most authentic reading experience from this book, because the author wanted it to be tedious to read. He wanted us to not like it, in a way. And so, the fact that it's pissing me off so much, I think that's the effect he was trying to induce. It's like making a CD, making an album, and it's just 70 minutes of nails down a chalkboard, and then being like, oh, you hated it? Oh, cool, that's what I was going for. So, again, I don't understand how you can claim to like it. It's like, the author didn't want you to like it. So, going into Lisa, he found her half reclining in an invalid chair in which she had been wheeled when she was unable to walk. She did not move to meet him, but her sharp, keen eyes were simply riveted on his face. There was a feverish look in her eyes. Her face was pale and yellow. Alyosha was amazed at the change that had taken place in her in 3 days. She was positively thinner. She did not hold out her hand to him. He touched the thin, long fingers which lay motionless on her dress. Then he sat down facing her without a word. I know you are in a hurry to get to the prison, Lisa said curtly. And Mama's kept you there for hours. She's just been telling you about me and Yulia. How do you know? Asked Alyosha. I've been listening. Why do you stare at me? I want to listen, and I do listen. There's no harm in that. I don't apologize. You are upset about something. On the contrary, I am very happy. I've only just been reflecting on the 30th time, what a good thing it is I refused you and shall not be your wife. You are not fit to be a husband. If I were to marry you and give you a note to take to the man I loved after you, you'd take it and be sure to give it to him and bring an answer back too. If you were 40... you would still go on taking my love letters for me. She suddenly laughed. There is something spiteful and yet open-hearted about you, Alyosha smiled to her. The open-heartedness consists in my not being ashamed of myself with you. What's more, I don't want to feel ashamed with you, just with you. Alyosha, why is it I don't respect you? I am very fond of you, but I don't respect you. If I respected you, I shouldn't talk to you without shame, should I? No. But do you believe that I am not ashamed with you? No, I don't believe it. Lisa laughed nervously again. She spoke rapidly. I sent your brother Dmitri Fyodorovich some sweets in prison. Alyosha, you know you are quite pretty. I shall love you awfully for having so quickly allowed me to love you. Why did you send me for me today, Lisa? I wanted to tell you a longing I have. I should like someone to torture me, marry me, and then torture me, deceive me, and go away. I don't want to be happy. You are in love with disorder? Yes, I want disorder. I keep wanting it to set fire to the house. I keep imagining how I'll creep out and set fire to the house on the sly. It must be on the sly. They'll try to put it out, but it'll go on burning, and I shall know and say nothing. Ah, what silliness, and how bored I am. She waved her hand with a look of repulsion. It's your luxurious life, said Alyosha softly. Is it better than to be poor? Yes, it is better. What? That's what your monk taught you. That's not true. Let me be rich and all the rest poor. I'll eat sweets and drink cream and not give any to anyone else. Ah, don't speak. Don't say anything. She shook her head at him, though Alyosha had not opened his mouth. You've told me that before, and I know it all by heart. It bores me. If I am ever poor, I shall murder somebody, and even if I am rich, I may murder someone, perhaps. Why do nothing? But do you know I should like to reap, cut the rye? I'll marry you, and you shall become a peasant, a real peasant. We'll keep a colt, shall we? Do you know Kalganov? Yes. He's always wondering about... excuse me. He's always wandering about, dreaming. He says, why live in real life? It's better to dream. One can dream the most delightful things, but real life is a bore. But he'll be married soon, for all that. He's been making love to me already. Can you spin tops? Yes. Well, he's just like a top. He wants to be wound up and set spinning and then be lashed with a whip. If I marry him, I'll keep him spinning all his life. You are not ashamed to be with me. No. You are awfully cross because I don't talk about holy things. I don't want to be holy. What will they do to one in the next world for the greatest sin? You know, you must know all about that. God will censure you. Alyosha was watching her steadily. That's just what I should like. I would go up. They should censure me. And I would burst out laughing in their faces. I should dreadfully like to set fire to the house, Alyosha, to our house. You still don't believe me. Why? There are children of 12 years old who have a longing to set fire to something, and they do set fire, things on fire, too. It's a sort of disease. That's not true. There may be children, but that's not what I mean. You take evil for good. It's a passing crisis. It's the results of your illness, perhaps. You do despise me, though. It's simply that I don't want to do good. I want to do evil, and it has nothing to do with illness, excuse me. Why do evil? So that everything might be destroyed. Ah, how nice it would be if everything were destroyed. You know, Alyosha, I sometimes think of doing a fearful lot of harm and everything bad, and I should do it for a long while on the sly, and suddenly everyone will be found out. Everyone will stand around and point their fingers at me, and I would look at them all. That would be awfully nice. Why would it be so nice, Alyosha? I don't know. It's a craving to destroy something for good, or, as you say, to set fire to something. It happens sometimes. I not only say it, I shall do it. I believe you. How I love you for saying you believe me. And you are not lying one little bit, but perhaps you think that I'm saying all this on purpose to annoy you. No, I don't think that. Though perhaps there is a little desire to do that in it, too. There is a little. I never can tell lies to you, she declared with a strange fire in her eyes. What struck Alyosha above everything was her earnestness. There was not a trace of humour or jesting in her face now, though. In old days, fun and gaiety never deserted her, even at the most earnest moments. There are moments when people love crime, said Alyosha thoughtfully. Yes, yes, you have uttered my thought. They love crime. Everyone loves crime. They love it always, not at some moments, you know. It's as though people have made an agreement to lie about it, and have lied about it ever since. They all declare that they hate evil, but secretly they all love it. And are you still reading nasty books? Yes, I am. Mama reads them and hides them under her pillow, and I steal them. Aren't you ashamed to destroy yourself? I want to destroy myself. There's a boy here who lay down between the railway lines when the train was passing. Lucky fellow. Listen, your brother is being tried now for murdering his father, and everyone loves his having killed his father. Loves his having killed his father? Yes, loves it. Everyone loves it. Everybody says it's so awful, but they secretly, they simply love it. I, for one, love it. There is some truth in what you say about everyone, said Alyosha softly. Oh, what ideas you have, Lisa shrieked in delight. And you, a monk, too. You wouldn't believe how I respect you, Alyosha, for never telling lies. Oh, I must tell you a funny dream of mine. I sometimes dream of devils. It's night. I am in my room with a candle, and suddenly there are devils all over the place, in all the corners under the table, and they open the doors, and there's a crowd of them behind the doors, and they want to come in and seize me, and they are just coming just to seize me, but I suddenly cross myself, and they all draw back. No, they don't go away altogether. They stand at the doors, in the corners, waiting, and suddenly I have a frightful longing to revile God aloud, and so I begin, and they become crawling back to me, delighted, and seize me again, and I cross myself again, and they all draw back. It's awful fun. It takes one's breath away. I've had the same dream, too, said Alyosha suddenly. Really? Cried Lisa, surprised. I say, Alyosha, don't laugh. That's really awfully important. Could two different people have the same dream? It seems they can. Alyosha, I tell you, it's awfully important, Lisa went on, with real excessive amazement. It's not the dream that's important, but you're having the same dream as me. You never lie to me. Don't lie now. Is it true? You are not laughing. It's true. Lisa seemed extraordinarily impressed, and for half a minute she went silent. Alyosha, come and see me. Come and see me more often, she said suddenly in a supplicating voice. I'll always come to see you all my life, answered Alyosha firmly. You are the only person I can talk to, you know, said Lisa began again. I talk to no one but myself and you, only you in the whole world, and to you more readily than myself. And I am not a bit ashamed with you, not a bit. Alyosha, why am I not ashamed with you, not a bit? Alyosha, is it true that at Easter the Jews steal a child and kill it? I don't know. There's a book here in which I read about the trial of a Jew who took a child for 4 years old, cut off his fingers in both hands, and then crucified him on the wall, hammered nails into him, and crucified him, and afterwards, when he was tried, he said that the child died soon, within 4 hours. That was soon. He said the child moaned, kept on moaning, and he stood admiring it. That's nice. Nice? Nice. I sometimes imagine that it was I who crucified him. He would hang there moaning, and I would sit opposite him, eating a pineapple compote. I'm awfully fond of pineapple compote. Do you like it? Alyosha looked at her in silence. Her pale, sallow face was suddenly contorted, her eyes burnt. You know, when I read about the Jew, I shook with sobs all night. I kept fancying how the little thing cried and moaned, a child of 4 years old. Understand, you know. And all the while, the thought of pineapple compote haunted me. In the morning, I wrote a letter to a certain person, begging him particularly to come and see me. He came, and I suddenly told him all about the child and the pineapple compote, all about it, all, and said that it was nice. He laughed and said it really was nice. Then he got up and went away. He was only here 5 minutes. Did he despise me? Did he despise me? Tell me, Alyosha, did he despise me or not? She sat up on the couch with flashing eyes. Tell me, Alyosha said anxiously. Did you send for that person? Yes, I did. Did you send him a letter? Yes. Simply to ask about that, about the child? No, not about that at all. But when he came, I asked him about that at once. He answered, laughed, got up and went away. That person behaved honourably, Alyosha murmured. And did he despise me? Did he laugh at me? No, for perhaps he believes in the pineapple compote himself. He is very ill now too, Lisa. Yes, he does believe in it, said Lisa, with flashing eyes. He doesn't despise anyone, Alyosha went on. Only he does not believe anyone. If he doesn't believe in people, of course he does despise them. Then he does despise me, me. You too. Good. Good, Lisa, said Lisa. Lisa seemed to grind her teeth. When he went out laughing, I felt that it was nice to be despised. The child with fingers cut off is nice, and to be despised is nice. And she laughed in Alyosha's face, a feverishly malicious laugh. Do you know, Alyosha, do you know I should like Alyosha? Save me. She suddenly jumped from the couch, rushed to him, and seized him with both hands. Save me. She almost groaned. Is there anyone in the world I could tell what I've told you? I've told you the truth. I shall kill myself because I loathe everything. I don't want to live because I loathe everything. I loathe everything. Everything, Alyosha. Why don't you love me in the least? She finished in a frenzy. But I do love you, answered Alyosha warmly. And will you weep over me? Will you? Yes, not because I want to be your wife, won't be your wife, but simply weep for me. Yes. Thank you. It's only your tears I want. Everyone else may punish me and trample me underfoot. Everyone, not accepting anyone. For I don't love anyone. Do you hear? Not anyone. On the contrary, I hate him. Go, Alyosha. It's time you went to your brother. She tore herself away from him suddenly. How can I leave you like this? Said Alyosha, almost in alarm. Go to your brother. The prison will be shut. Go.
Here's your hat. Give my love to Mitchell. Go, go.
And she almost forcibly pushed Alyosha out of the door. He looked at her with pained surprise when he was suddenly aware of a letter in his right hand, a tiny letter folded up tight and sealed. He glanced at it and instantly read the address to Ivan Fyodorovich Karamazov. He looked quickly at Lisa. Her face had become almost menacing. Give it to him. You must give it to him, she ordered him, trembling and beside himself. Today, at once, or I'll poison myself. That's why I sent for you. And she slammed the door quickly. The bolt clicked. Alyosha put the note in his pocket and went straight downstairs without going back to Madame Holokov, forgetting her. In fact, as soon as Alyosha had gone, Lisa unbolted the door, opened it a little, put her finger in the crack and slammed the door with all her might, pinching her finger. 10 seconds after releasing her finger, she walked softly, slowly to her chair, sat up straight in it and looked intently at her blackened finger, at the blood that oozed from under the nail. Her lips were quivering and she kept whispering rapidly to herself, I am a wretch, 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 wretch. All right, there we go, another chapter down. Not as boring. Actually quite morbid, strange, fascinating, interesting chapter. Thank you, Dosto. Well, have your say over at reddit.com/r/thehemingwaylist. I'm sure there'll be some conversation about this one, strange as it was. Thanks for listening. I'll see you tomorrow.